Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
Mavis says, a science question for Dr. Carl. A dying tree is oozing sap. What is the connection? Well, we're going to ask Dr. Carl that question because he is with us. Good morning, Dr. Carl. How are you doing?
Good morning, Dr. Howard. I'm very well. Lovely to be with you again.
It's great to have you. So I'm not sure if you heard the question from one of our listeners. The connection between a tree oozing sap and the health of the tree, I guess.
I'm not skilled on that. It's part of their immune system response to fighting off infections and attack. And what can happen is that the sap can, after a period of time, turn into amber. And it has been thought that there is a possibility that insects trapped in amber over thousands or millions of years may be preserved well enough for us to get hold of some DNA from those ancient insects. And that was the theme of Jurassic Park, that in fact the insect had bitten its way into a dinosaur, had stabbed the dinosaur and had some dinosaur DNA, and that was what was used to bring back the dinosaurs from the past. However, the full reason of why they do the whole leaking sap thing, unfortunately, I'm not a botanist, so I can't tell you any more than that. I've failed you, Dr. Howard.
Sorry. No, you have certainly haven't. But let's talk about coal for just a moment, because apparently there's a new theory about how coal was formed.
Yes, it's interesting. The thing was that back about a third of a billion years ago, and to put that in perspective, the Earth is about 4.5 billion years old. About a third of a billion years ago, there were huge forests on planet Earth, and the oxygen level went climbing all the way up to about 33%, and we had insects that had wingspans up to 70 meters across. Now, the standard explanation has been that there weren't any termite-type creatures back then that had in their guts bacteria that could eat the wood. And so the trees fell over in forests, were gradually buried, and by a combination of temperature and pressure and acids and catalysts, we end up turning somehow the wood into lignite, which has got more carbon on a percentage basis, then sub-bituminous coal, sub means under, and then bituminous coal, and then finally anthracite, which is about 99.9% carbon. And people have been worried about this for a long time. There's various things that have bothered them, like how come we sometimes get mines of methane gas or collections of methane gas near the coal and sometimes we don't. And the latest understanding is that the coal was created by bacteria, and we're gradually shifting across with some complicated reasoning involving carbon 14 and chemicals called methoxyl. So we're understanding coal. So it shows that even something that we thought we knew, like where did coal come from? It fell over and got squashed. Our understanding is now getting a bit better.
It's just incredible how much we continue to learn. We think we knew so much, but we just don't. It's that simple. Tell us about erotophenes, because I can't pronounce it. You're going to have to do that for me.
Okay. I don't know the pronunciation. And by the way, for anybody listening, I am proud to be with people who do not know how to pronounce something that they're talking about, because that shows that they got that knowledge by reading.
Oh.
And didn't actually hear somebody say it. So they had to work harder. So Eratosthenes,
I think
that's the correct pronunciation.
I didn't even get it remotely right.
No, I know. Well, I'm following the standard English pronunciation where the stress is on the third last syllable, but so it should be Eratosthenes.
Right,
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
If somebody could ring in, that'd be lovely. Anyway, so he was around about 2,250 years ago. And 2,500 years ago, people were already quite convinced that the Earth was a globe, not a flat surface. And that was, firstly, that when you saw a ship vanish over the horizon, firstly, the hull would go, then the lower mast, then the upper mast. Secondly, that the Earth, during a lunar eclipse, when the moon goes into the Earth's shadow, Earth casts a shadow that's always curved, round, not elliptical. That can only happen with the sphere. And thirdly, as you travel north and south and look at the stars at night, you'll see different constellations at different heights above the horizon. And so it was Eratosthenes, that's what I'm saying now, mm-hmm. who around 2,250 years ago realized that in Aswan, you know, it's a place in Egypt where they got that huge dam, the Aswan Dam, mm-hmm. and at that time he was the number one chief librarian of the library at Alexandria, and as such, that was the greatest library in the world at that time, and as such, he also was the personal tutor of the children of King Ptolemy III. Anyway, so he had heard and he had read that around June 21 every year in Aswan, which is about 800 kilometers from where he was, the sun would be directly overhead and would throw a shadow, it would throw light down to the bottom of a very deep well with no shadow. Every bit of the inside of the well was illuminated, indicating that the sun was directly overhead. On that same day, once he had this knowledge, he measured the angle of a shadow cast by a stick at noon, and blow me down, it was around 7.2 degrees, or about 1/50th of a complete circle. Hooray! All he had to do was work out the distance between where he was, Alexandria, and Aswan. And so he hired somebody called, now this is a word I never knew before, Bematist, B-E-M-A-T-I-S-T, handy crossword clue. That's a professional surveyor trained to walk with steps of equal length. So he hired some of them, got the average of what they reckoned the distance was between Aswan and Alexandria, multiplied by 50, and got the circumference of the Earth accurate to within 10%. Oh my gosh, what an amazing person.
Absolutely incredible. But this is what, it's something I've been looking forward to asking you. And that is that a few years ago, apparently, engineers worked out how to make a teapot that can't dribble. And we are talking about a teapot, right?
Correct. That's the proper way to have tea, where you mm-hmm. put leaves mm-hmm. in a teapot that you have pre-warmed, and then you pour out the tea. And so at the beginning, it's fairly straightforward. You're pouring out the tea from the spout with a reasonable volume, so there's no dribbling. But as the cup gets fuller, you back off the flow, and you start finding that you're subject to the terrible trauma of tea dribbling down the underside Absolutely. Of the spout of the teapot mm. when you're getting near the end.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we've never had a good theory of what's going on. It's really complicated. Anything to do with fluids is complicated. Some physicists back in 2009 came up with a brute force approach. They coated the underneath of the spout with a thin layer of a material that very strongly repels water. And it worked, but really, so we wanted a mathematical approach. And so scientists have written this 40-page paper talking about a thin, steady, developed, viscous-free surface flow passing the sharp trailing edge of a horizontal. It's very complicated, yeah. full of big words.
Velocity.
And they go through the whole yeah. thing for 40 work pages, coming up with a full and complete theory. And then at the end, in the very last sentence, they say, "We feel an urgent need for careful and systematic laboratory experiments
oh, no.
with the ultimate goal of corroborating our theoretical findings." So they have spent ages coming up with a theory, but of course now they need other scientists to prove that the elements of their theory are correct by doing the work, because theoretical physicists are completely different from experimental physicists. If you've got an experimental, a theoretical physicist, and they walk near a photocopier, it'll immediately drop dead. So that's theoretical physicists for you.
In other words, it's a very long way of telling us that we've got no idea why teapots dribble.
We've got a theory. Mm-hmm. We've got what we think is a theory. And by the way, in the land of science, theory means a full and complete explanation.
Right.
Whereas for the average person, it just means a wild guess.
It's just a theory. It's just a gut. Absolutely. Dr. Carl, it is 7:26. Thank you. As always, we learn so much on a Wednesday.